Meow! Welcome to the Cat Tunes Podcast. I'm your host, Catherine Corelli. On this podcast, I'm going to talk about the stories behind my songs, the production tools that I've used, the production methods that I've employed, the instruments that I've played, the instruments that I've discovered, the arrangement methods that I've used, the real-life stories which precipitated the creation of my entire albums or of my separate tracks. So let's jump right into it, shall we? And welcome you listening to the Cat Tunes Podcast. This is episode 90, and today we're going to be talking about the first track called Echo Prelude from the When Painkillers Fail, Tea Lilith Archive Volume 1 album. And by the way, the Tea Lilith Archive Volume 1 in the title of this album was not in the original title at all. This little addition to the title appeared in 2018 when this album was actually released on all major streaming platforms. The album itself, however, was recorded way back in 2007, and it was released previously in 2010. As far as I remember, it's hard to track this back because I haven't been on Jamendo for a long while. Jamendo.com. I haven't been on Reverb Nation for a very long while, so it's been quite a while, but I'm assuming that probably I've published it previously alongside other albums, you know, my older albums. So the original album was in production way back in 2007. Back then I was experimenting a lot with a lot of things, and I was pretty frustrated because I didn't have any I didn't have a guitar. I didn't have much of a choice as far as software. So I was basically confined to Reason, what was that, Reason 5.1 probably, something like that. And just don't laugh. Adobe Audition 1.0. That was the piece of software in which I was recording the vocals and doing some mixing and also using various effects and basically utilizing Adobe Audition for all sorts of weird effects. You know, everything that I could not do in Reason at the time, because Reason 5.1, as far as I remember, didn't allow for much didn't allow for much variety. It had its, that is not to say that it's a bad piece of software, it was nice for the time, but it didn't have, I don't know, it was too clean. That's how I felt about it. At the time, it was too clean, whereas I was trying to, at least on this album, and others alike, I was trying to produce some really aggressive tones, and a rather dirty texture, and I didn't have any electric guitars, so that was problematic. So I was looking for ways to distort pads and synthesizers so that they would kind of sort of sound like guitars, and I like to think that I've succeeded at that, at least on this album When Painkillers Fail, because looking back at this, you know, for an album that was recorded without a single guitar part, without a single live guitar part, I think it turned out pretty pretty industrial in sound and pretty aggressive. I was using all sorts of techniques, including, and that is because I didn't have a good mic at the time. I had a cheap, half-broken karaoke mic, which had a, something was wrong with the cable, so it had noise, coming from somewhere, and I was using that as texture. I was recording. I was using this low-tech production equipment that I had, including my pretty crappy sound card. And I was recording all sorts of noises and accidental noises, mic bleeds, and then blending that with synthesizers and incorporating that into my production. When Painkillers Fail, I'm picking this album for this next season because it got voted in. That's why. I put up a poll on Telegram and on my YouTube channel, but I put up these two polls pretty late, so there wasn't a lot of votes. On Telegram, I put up three albums: When Painkillers Fail, Killed Alive, and the other one was Alice Severance. And each one of them got an equal amount of votes. And then the winner on YouTube was When Painkillers Fail. So basically, I had to go with this album. And as I'm recording this already, I'm thinking currently, am I gonna be able to keep the same structure of the podcast? Because When Painkillers Fail is perhaps the only album for which I do not have the original Reason projects. So I don't have any MIDI text, I don't have the original stems, I don't have any of that. And that is because back in 2009 or 2010, I think 2010, my old hard drive burned. And I had the backup files for this entire album. With all the stems, with all the vocal stems, with all the Reason projects, the original Reason projects, and sessions for each song, I had it on a DVD or something like that. All the samples that I was using in these projects, all of that was stored separately. So I both lost that DVD because of my endless moving from one place to another at the time. I believe this CD got left behind with my ex-boyfriend, and I was never able to retrieve it, and then I guess it was just lost. And the copies of these files, of this whole project, this whole entire folder, which was on my hard drive at the time, that hard drive burned down. Literally, it burned. In 2010, as far as I remember, so I lost all of these original files. So, why am I saying this? Not to complain, but just to, I will have to basically pick up the riffs and, you know, in my music analysis section, right, in the second section, I will have to operate by ear instead of actually looking into the MIDI text and telling you what is there. So I will have to guess, you know, the keys, and approximate BPM. Maybe, you know, maybe I won't even do it this time, and try to kind of emulate or kind of try to replicate as close as I can various musical elements, because I just don't have the precise exact MIDI text in front of me. So it's gonna be different with this season, exactly because I don't have all the original files. Maybe it's, you know, to the better. I have no idea. I don't know. So, anyways, this is the first episode of this new season. We're looking at Echo Prelude, which is the first track from this very experimental album. At the time, as far as I remember, this was probably the first really heavy album that I was working on. Well, I mean, there were others. There was an album that I recorded entirely. I spent a whole year recording that album called The Countess Destiny. That was an album from 2005. It was leaning more towards something like Dream Theater, perhaps, because I was enamored with progressive metal at the time. So it wasn't that dirty, it didn't have that, you know, industrial edge. It was more complex musically and more technical musically. And again, no live guitars, no live drums, none of that. It was all programmed. But it was massive. It was a three-part, enormous album, which was 2 hours long, basically 2 or 2.5 hours long, something like that. For that album, I do have the originals, interestingly, the original projects and that kind of stuff. And maybe, I will get to it sometime in the future and I will actually record it. That's one of the albums that was never released, The Countess Destiny. So When Painkillers Fail wasn't like the first rock album or metal album that I've attempted to record, but it became the first one which was actually completed and put out in the open. This doesn't mean that I never experimented with sounds, trying to get a juicy, heavy sound out of Reason, out of the software that I had at the time. I did, but I never brought... none of those projects have ever seen the light of day, basically. So I'm thinking about When Painkillers Fail. I'm thinking of it as this is the oldest released album with dirty, heavy electronic guitars that emulate real guitars, that kind of stuff, with growling, screaming, yelling, that kind of stuff. Pretty aggressive stuff. And you will hear it, you know, as I'll be moving from song to song, you will hear it. It's a pretty dark and aggressive album. And it's, you know, the first of its kind and one of its kind in my discography. So here we are looking at Echo Prelude, which is the opening track. And as far as I remember, it was... Echo Prelude was probably written in just one night. Or should I say compiled? Because I was, I think... To my memory, I don't exactly remember this because I don't have the files in front of me and I can't tell you the precise dates of when and what was created. But as far as I remember, I spent that summer, 2007, I've written basically half the songs. I was working on other projects too, and I was kind of distracted occasionally, you know, by this and that and blah, 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 and, you know, lots of events going on in my life. But I had some songs were written. Some of them were fully written, at least 4 or 5 of them. And, something to that effect. But, like, 2/3 of the album weren't written. But I had an idea, a rather peculiar idea for an intro. I wanted some song to be like an intro. And the way I seen it at the time, I thought that I wanted an intro for the first part of the album and an intro for the second part of the album. But I didn't know what was, you know, where the dividing line was going to appear. So I wanted to experiment at the same time. So I remember it was a night in October. I was alone in an apartment where I used to live with my friends. My friends were getting divorced, and I had 2 weeks to leave that apartment. And that night, I was basically thinking really hard, where am I going to live? Because I had like 2 days left, something along those lines. I remember I was drinking Glint wine, made with actual red wine. It was a cold, windy, rainy, very nasty evening and night. It was dark, and I was absolutely alone in that apartment, which was pretty bizarre because I was a babysitter for my friends, for their family, and it looked so dark and desolate and... the whole apartment looked so abandoned, and there was this sense of that, you know, I felt horrible about that this couple, that they're breaking up, and they have a little kid, and I was babysitting this kid, and I see all of the toys, you know, and all of this laying around, And the apartment is half dark because apparently, you know, since I was alone there for a few days now, I wouldn't burn, you know, that much light. I didn't need it. So the room is dark. I'm sitting in the kitchen. I was sitting in the kitchen back then with my computer. I had a tower computer, as far as I remember. Yeah. I've prepped some glint wine in a huge bowl. And I had this idea to just pull some samples together and kind of try to paint the intro. Instead of going with a coherent melody or anything like that, I thought that I would just go, you know, pull some textures. I rather wanted to paint a soundscape and create a feeling. I wanted to convey the kind of feeling, the kind of darkness that I felt at the time, and make that into the opening, like the doorstep to the album. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to set the tone, because previously, I believe maybe just, you know, a few weeks before that, I've written the song Condemned to Live, and it's deliberately misspelled. It's not condemned, it's condemned to live. And I will get to it in the next episode, but this song, I felt that the way it starts, it starts abruptly. You know, like, yeah, I wanted to have that as the first track on the album for a while, but then I was like, nah, it needs something. You need to put something right before it, some sort of intro. You need to kind of prepare the grounds for this track to come in. And that's why I was thinking about something, which ended up called Echo Prelude. Plus, I have to admit that at the time, I was tremendously influenced by Slipknot. Slipknot and Korn, of course, but Slipknot to a much larger extent. And one of my most favorite albums, still to this day, is Iowa by Slipknot. And Slipknot does have, on that album, they have this bizarre intro, which is dark, aggressive, it pulls you in, sets the stage, and it is like a doorstep to the entire album. And then when the album actually starts, it just sucks you in, you just leap right into it. And it doesn't basically let you go until the very end. So I was kind of going for the same feel. And I spent several hours during that night, I don't remember, probably like 4 or 5 hours, experimenting with my crappy karaoke mic, which didn't even have the head, you know, the covering on the head. It was stitched up and taped with something so that it would just, you know, hold together. It was a very crappy mic. I didn't buy that mic. It was just some mic that was laying around. I don't remember where did I get it, really. And I went in and I started experimenting. At the time, I used to do pretty weird stuff. Like I would record some noise, you know, some water, some tap water, for example. Or I would buzz with my lips into the mic. And then the recording wouldn't be very clean, really. But then I would use the Adobe Audition effects, all sorts of effects. You know, pitching, up pitching and down pitching, stutter, there was a stutter effect as far as I remember, stretching. I would cut and, you know, cut and paste and reverse and play around with phases, you know, inverting phases or something like that. I was doing plenty of very weird, things to every bit of noise that had any aesthetic value to it. So it was wild experimentation. I spent an entire night, I think like 4 or 5 hours. And in that time span, I basically had the entire Echo Prelude laid out. It wasn't mixed. I kind of left it there for the time being. And Yeah, I was pulling in. The peculiar thing about this track is that I have, on one hand, I wanted to make a major, like a big build-up from the very beginning of the track up until the end of it, so that it would just seamlessly blend, seamlessly go into the first actual song, which would be Condemned to Live. So I wanted a long, drawn-out build-up. I wanted it to be eerie, I wanted it to be really dark, painful, and full of, not really scary, but really dark, ominous sounds. You know, I wanted it to be a very disturbing soundscape, because that's how I felt at the time, and I was just basically trying to translate that into a dark aesthetic. So I think what we'll do here is I will move on to the music analysis section. And while I'm talking about that, because it's not going to be a long music analysis section, I'm just going to basically go through the track, and I'm going to comment on certain aspects of it, but not on all of it. And then I will conclude in the third section. But I will just give more detail as I'm talking about the music. So with that being said, let's move on to the next section, shall we? So here we go with some music analysis. I'm not going to be precisely repeating everything that is in the track, but I will play big sections. In this case, from the beginning through the first more or less musical theme, because there is going to be a musical theme with a distinct chord progression and a distinct melody that is going to be showing up there. So, and then I will comment on it, all right? One thing that I'm going to say is that it's kind of difficult to pinpoint the main key in such an amorphous track, because occasionally it is just no key. It is just noise and textures and soundscape. Then at some point, the first theme appears and it's in C minor. And then it all disperses again into chaos, basically, and then it reemerges again out of the deep, so to speak. Another theme emerges, and that one shows up in A minor, and then all of that is being concluded in the end of the track. So let's listen from the beginning up to where the first theme ends, and after that I will comment, all right?
Yeah.
The track starts with a lot of chaos. It starts with weird noises and textures and samples, basically, because a lot of these noises are, in fact, samples that come from other songs, which will appear later. And that's kind of part of the point. For example, there is a screaming, growling sample.
Our life!
This one. Which comes from the song Virtual Real, as far as I remember. And then there is the repetition of the word die, 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 die. And I will get to the meaning of all this. Why is it in this intro? What does this really mean? Because apparently some people might think that, well, this is a very nihilistic track and that kind of stuff. I don't think it is a very nihilistic track. I think quite the opposite of it. But anyways, musically speaking, so the track starts with lots of, you know, texture and noise and some weird pad in the back which is dissonant. And it's kind of, it's by design, it's supposed to be this way. It's supposed to be chaos. Because it is an analogy for me, myself, emerging from chaos. There is a personal reference there because I'm telling the story of how I've emerged from chaos into existence, into something concrete, something tangible, something audible and palpable, something that has order within it. And that the metaphor for order is when you hear the first, out of all of this noise, you start to hear some weird sample that starts to form a rhythmic pattern. And it's in 3/4. And then after that, gradually, first it's some sort of synth, probably, with the pulsating rhythmic thing going on. So that's what it's doing. We're in C minor. That's exactly what's going on there. So the first note is C, D flat, F, F flat, G, D flat, and then there is a melody that shows up. So it goes through a D flat into an F minor. F flat major +7. goes into a D flat major plus 7-9. So there are in fact three chords, basically three chords. C minor, F minor, minus 7-9, F major flat, F flat major, plus 7. And a D flat major plus 7. And this rather sad melody on top there. Now, despite this F flat major plus 7, this bizarre, absolutely seemingly out of place chord in this chord progression, right? And despite the Phrygian minor, the melody on top, however, doesn't even utilize the harmonic minor seventh. It doesn't utilize the B natural. No, it doesn't. It's all around. First of all, it rotates in the first part of the melody. It uses the notes G, E flat, C. And then the second part, A flat, E flat. So it's 1/4 over here, right? G, another 1/4 up here, G, C, A flat. So it's extremely simple. It's a very simple melody, which in itself doesn't have any tension. It's a very subdued kind of tension because all the tension is surrounding all of this. The melody is pretty calm. It's pretty tame. It doesn't have obviously dissonant intervals in it like this, for example. Something like this. No, it is rather calm. The tension comes from the chord progression. And then, of course, it comes from the surrounding noise, but this theme in itself is like an island of solace, you could say. And it kind of serves that purpose. And it builds up and it builds up and it builds up, and you think, well, maybe it will actually bring order to the entire track, and it doesn't, because it can't. It's just a beginning. This is just the beginning of the album, so it cannot subdue the chaos that is raging around, the chaos that is all tattered and torn, and just, you know, all over the place. It can't quench it. So then it disintegrates once again, and after that, out of that chaos, there is going to be another melody that's going to emerge. So from now on, let's listen to the end, all the way from here to the end of the track, and then I'll comment on this part. Oh, my God. So, as I said, everything disintegrated into chaos. The first theme went back into chaos. And this time it's kind of a more intense and more... what's the word? It's more antagonistic. The chaos has upped the ante, basically. And then out of this new level of chaos, there is another melody that emerges. And this time, there is a sample from the very last track on the album. At the time when I was working on Echo Prelude on that dark night, I already had the Hushabye Baby track, which will further become the last one on the album. I've already had it written. With the lyrics and with the music, I had it already recorded. Or it was in the works, I don't exactly remember, but it was already done. So I could use the samples, to be more precise, to be more specific. Some stems from that song, I could slap them into this intro, into Echo Prelude, and kind of remix them. That's exactly what I wanted. I wanted to give this sense of finality, give a hint of what, where are we gonna end, like a premonition kind of thing. I wanted to incorporate it into the intro of the album. So the last track on from the album, Hushabye Baby, actually appears in the very beginning. And to someone who is listening to this album for the very first time, it's not immediately obvious. You wouldn't know until you get to the very last track. And this is deliberate because, you know, I was counting on that people would listen from the beginning to the end. Like, I myself tend to listen. I like to listen to albums from the very beginning, from the first sound all the way to the last sound, so that I get the full picture and I get the intent of the producer, of the composers, whoever was working on the album, because I want to get the full picture and I want to get the full body of work. I want to get the message, you know, and if there is, you know, at least I want to find out if there is any message, any coherent big message hidden within an album. It's like reading a book, basically, and I tend to perceive albums like books. It's a book, like it's like a novel, basically, in my mind. That's what an album is. So I did understand at the time that I'm showing the last track, the melody, you know, the theme of the last track, the main theme. I'm showing it early on in the intro to the album. And I didn't know how many songs are going to be in between these two points. But I was hoping that I would accomplish a very specific effect, what I wanted to get out of that. I didn't expect that anybody would memorize the melody from the intro and would carry it through all 12 or 13 tracks throughout the whole album, keep it in mind, and somehow you know, immediately recognize it in the last track. I didn't expect that, but I had a basic understanding of how the human mind works, and so I was hoping that this hint, this subtle hint in the very beginning, would be perceived once the listener gets to the last track. The listener would unconsciously see, hear, rather, this Hushabye Baby track as familiar. And that would feel like home. It would feel like, I've heard this before, I know this track. Unconsciously, not with the conscious mind, because consciously I don't expect anybody to memorize everything down to note. No. But that's what I was hoping for. So, what's going on here? Hushabye Baby, and I will analyze separately, of course. You know, this is going to be the last episode of, you know, the album analysis, right? So I will get to this track, but out of this chaos, you know, left over from the previous theme, we're diving into, it starts to crystallize again, it starts to amalgamate, and out of this chaos, out of these noises and samples and this repetition of just die, 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 just die, just die, and this other yelling sample,
alive,
this stuff, there appears, we are landing in A minor, which is even lower than C minor. So it's a lower key, right? And it almost sounds like an ethno-styled melody, like a Celtic melody, I think. Fifths in it, this melody. This is all around a fifth. And then it returns back to the root. Then again. Hushabye baby. Ba 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 ba. There, which are dissonant in comparison to the openness of the fifths of this fifth, and then this. You see? Between G and C. So the entire melody is basically contained within two fifths. One is A, E, and the other one is C, G. And the melody itself, except for the last section, except for this, This whole melody for Hushabye Baby is basically based in natural minor. It's smooth, let's put it this way. It's smooth as compared to the more dramatic harmonic minor. So, Hushabye Baby over here in this prelude to the entire album, it appears in a distant, detached, dreamlike way. And the purpose of it is to finally rein in the chaos and bring in some order. It can't overpower the chaos. It can't even contain the chaos. It makes a feeble attempt at it, and it somewhat accomplishes this. It reigns in the chaos through sadness. Much in line with what I believed at the time, you know, and what I like to quote from Slipknot, which was, pain makes the order. It is the pain that creates order out of chaos. And then, out of that order, something else starts to emerge. This is what you can work with. This is a starting point of a journey. When there is some semblance of order, from there on, the journey can begin. So, now that I kind of touched upon some musical elements here, let's move on to the next section. I'll kind of conclude this episode and talk about the significance of samples and this kind of stuff. All right, so let's move on to the next section, shall we? So, the thing that I want to say, and that's something that I've actually promised I will explain, is about why, first of all, there is this, that's life, our life, that's life, our life, this yelling, growling, or screaming sample from Virtual Real, from a song, what was that, 7th track or 9th track, I don't remember, from the middle of the album, basically. And then there is this, you're dying, die, 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 you're dying. What is that about? Because some people over the years, some people who heard this track, they were like, well, it's a song about death. It's an ominous, depressing, nihilistic track. No, it isn't. It is not it is an ominous track, but it is not, definitely not, a nihilistic track. This is the beginning of a journey. See, this theme of death happens in the beginning of a journey. It is not about the ultimate death. This is about the preparation for rebirth. This is about shedding old skin. This is about that the old self, the old, outdated, troublesome self has to die. And a new self has to emerge out of the ashes. That's what this track is about. And it sets the stage for the entire album. Granted, the entire album is very dark. It is aggressive, and it ends, I wouldn't say that it ends on a very positive note, but at least it ends in a different, in a more elevated spot. Let's put it this way, in a more elevated spot as compared to the beginning. So the old self is dying throughout most of the album, and the new self is emerging out of those ashes. And that new self, still tattered and torn, still weak and fragile, shows up in the very end of the album, in Hushabye Baby, which the listener, hopefully, will recognize in a very subtle way on the last track, where it's Hushabye Baby, close your eyes, etc., etc. This is not, it's in part addressed to a baby, a kind of a collective baby, after all, I was a babysitter at the time, and I got really attached to the baby that I was babysitting, that I was taking care of. On the other hand, however, and perhaps for the most part, this is the This is addressed to the baby within. It's both a negotiation and it is an attempt to heal and take care of the baby within in order to move on. So when painkillers fail as a whole, of course, should open with a pretty ominous track, because I personally, in my life, was starting in a very dark place that wasn't full of much joy and happiness. There was no joy and happiness. For the most part, it was pretty gloomy, it was pretty dark, it was pretty painful. So I wanted to rid myself of that old, tattered and torn and self, which was reveling in depression and suffering endlessly, which was being tormented endlessly with pain and nightmares. So this is why When Painkillers Fail opens with a track like this, which is called Echo Prelude. Why is it called Echo Prelude? Because this is an echo from my past. At the time when I was writing this album, it was 2007, right, when I started working on this album, and I did not rationalize through it this way, the way I'm laying it out today. I did not have that rationale. I was just going with my intuitive, with my instinctive feel of how things should be, all right? But Echo Prelude was kind of an instinctive way to give it a name. And now that I'm thinking about it, I think that it's called Echo Prelude because it is an echo. In 2007, I was having echoes of my past from my earlier days, when I was a child, when I was a teenager. So that's why it's called Echo Prelude. And it's a prelude because it is a prelude to an entire chapter, to an entire album, to an entire kind of mini novel, you could say, throughout which I'm supposed to grow. That growth was happening at the time in my life. I was moving on from one chapter to another chapter, and this is reflected in this album. So this is the significance of this intro, and while from purely musical standpoint, one won't see a conventional song here. It is not really a song, it is a painting. In fact, I would say that this is a painting that utilizes soundscape, texture, sound, noise, samples, and that's it. It is not a conventional song. It's pretty chaotic. It's too chaotic. It is rather a very cinematic depiction of a concept. That's what it is. And that's exactly the purpose that it serves. Yes, further on the album, there are going to be songs that are conventionally, that can be conventionally recognized as actual songs. It kind of straightens itself out. But that is part of the design, that this album should start with a chaotic intro, with, at least it seems, with a portrayal, let me be more specific, with a portrayal, with a depiction of chaos that eventually crystallizes itself into order. And from there on, it proceeds through pain and suffering, but in a more or less orderly fashion, albeit all the aggression, albeit all the pain and outbursts and wilderness, because there are going to be quite a few wild tracks. So this is the role that Echo Prelude plays on When Painkillers Fail. And I think for the most part I've covered this track. I quite frankly didn't expect that it would take me so long. I don't know how long is this episode going to turn out. I hope it's not going to be too long. And I think this is where I'm going to be wrapping it up anyways. I don't want to exceed 1 hour. So, as usual, if you have not listened to any of my music, if you don't know my music, if you never heard any of it, I want to invite you to check it out on any major streaming platform, be that Spotify, Apple Music, iTunes, Amazon, Deezer, YouTube Music, whichever you prefer. Just look for Catherine Corelli. Catherine with a C, Corelli with a C. If you discover something to your ear, please share it. Please follow me on these music platforms. I will appreciate this. And if you really enjoy my music, please don't hesitate and share it. And if you happen to do some sort of videos, if you have a YouTube channel and you want to use some of my music, go ahead and use it. Yes, it will get monetized. But that way you can actually help me. If you want to use my music and you have a channel and you want to help me and you appreciate the work that I'm putting in into my music, this is how you can help me. And of course, as usual, I want to invite you to check out my other business, which is southerncaracal.com, southern as in southern, caracal, caracal.com. We have all natural skin healing soaps, oatmeal and honey skin healing soaps. Some of them are with CBD oil, which is very good for relieving pain and aches and arthritis and this kind of stuff. And we do have aromatherapy soaps as well. And we have lotions and we have shampoo bars. We have a whole variety of products. Halloween is getting closer and closer, and I even have a few soap bars which are packaged exactly for Halloween. They have that kind of design. So if you do care for your skin, if you prefer all natural products, which are made here in the United States, specifically here in Kentucky, or maybe you want to make a present, maybe you want to make a gift for your friends and relatives or something like that, I would advise you to check out our website, southerncaracal.com. Pick something for yourself or for your friends and family, and the skin of your friends and family and your own skin will thank you later. That I can guarantee. People love our all natural products, especially now that is getting kind of a little colder and drier, and it's not summer anymore. So things like all natural lotions become increasingly relevant. Just saying. But anyways, I think this is where I'm going to be wrapping up this episode. Thank you very much for being with me. I appreciate you. I love you. You have yourself a wonderful and amazing weekend. I love you. And you will hear me on the next episode. And by the way, thank you for being with me. Thank you for listening to my podcast. I really do appreciate this. If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends. And just share it. All right? And you will hear me next time.